I would like to dedicate this shir le'iloi nishmas, my grandmother, Chana Bas Yitzchak, who was nifteres on Chaf Beis El, September 17th, 2014. And this shir is being prepared during the week of her shiva. We are now going to discuss the last category of mitzvos, which is entitled Avoda. And Rabbi Elias begins the 14th letter with his synopsis by stating that Avoda are commandments that are to prepare us for the life of action by projection of the divine will into our inner self to educate, elevate, and purify us. And basically, Avoda consists of mitzvos done in the Beis HaMikdash, the entire service done in the Mikdash, and the second part of this is tefillah and brachos that we recite throughout the day and at various times. So as usual, we are going to begin the mitzvah by discussing what exactly Avoda means from Diane Grunfeld's introduction to Chorev, and this one is very, very long, and I'm going to summarize parts of it, but mostly I'm going to read it because it's so basic to the understanding of Avoda and understanding how all these categories of mitzvos work in our daily lives. So let us begin. Here too, in this final category of the commandments, Rav Hirsch shows his originality of exposition. Avoda, literally service, is defined in the 19 letters as clarification and sanctification of our inner powers by word or deed, symbols, to the end that our conception of our task be rendered clearer and we be better fitted to fulfill our mission on earth. The commandments grouped around the term Avoda are the crown of all the others and presuppose their active performance. If we take to heart the truths which Toros teach us, absorbing them in mind and spirit, if we demonstrate them for us and for others through the Eidos, if we implement them joyfully in word and deed, in righteousness and love as Mishpatim, Chukim, and Mitzvos teach us, then our life is a continued Avoda or service of God. There are two kinds of Avoda, our active service in everyday life, which is called outward Avoda, and our inner preparation for that activity, which is called inner Avoda, or in the language of our sages, Avoda Shebelev, service of the heart. Okay, we're going to skip now to the bottom of the page. The first we call offerings or sacrifices, korbanos. The second, prayers, tefillos. Both aim at purifying our hearts and our thoughts. They have the same aim and differ only by the mode of influencing the inner self. In the ideal state of Jewish life, which is postulated during the existence of the temple in Jerusalem, both modes of worship existed contemporaneously. Prayer followed the offering and often went parallel with it. In the next few lines, Diane Grunfeld discusses what ma'amados are, and basically there were 24 divisions among the entire nation, and representatives from each one of these groups would be involved at the same time. So you had a group of Kohanim bringing the sacrifices. You'd have a group of Levim doing their service, and you'd have a group of Yisraelim who would be doing the appropriate tefillos that would go for each karban. So continuing, in an extensive and important essay called the Shmona Esrei, Rav Hirsch proves that the Amidah is a translation into words of the sacrificial acts. Arising out of this conception, Rav Hirsch dedicated much of his life's work to the elucidation of the religious and moral ideas which the various kinds of offerings were intended to produce in the minds of those offering them up. As the Chorev deals only with laws applicable in the diaspora and in times when the temple no longer existed, Rav Hirsch expounded his theory of the sacrifices in his other writings. In doing so, he uses symbolic as well as ethical thought categories. True to his general method, Rav Hirsch bases his theory of the sacrifices on all the details of the halachos referring to korbanos, and we've pointed out many times that Rav Hirsch focuses on the details, which gives you a very strong underpinning for your hashkafa, so that nothing seems accidental or without deeper meaning in these halachic details. Thus, the kind of animal offered, the number of animals prescribed, the way in which the various actions of the priests are to be carried out in the course of the avoda in the temple, all these are the source of spiritual and moral lessons in the exposition by Rav Hirsch. And in the last few sentences on the page, Diane Rumfeld discusses that each part of the animal has its own symbolic meaning. So continuing, we're now going to discuss false allegations against Carbonos. In his polemical writings against the reformers of his day, Rav Hirsch refuted their false allegations taken over from Protestant theologians that the prophets of Israel were opposed to sacrifices. He rightly explains the various prophetical passages which have thus been misinterpreted by the reformers as merely expressing the antagonism of the prophets against the mistaken idea that offerings could be allowed to go hand in hand with immoral actions in daily life, or could in themselves be considered as replacing good deeds instead of merely symbolizing and promoting them by bringing man nearer to God. The Hebrew word for sacrifice, karban, first derives from the root of karev, to be near, in other words, bringing man near to God, if followed by appropriate action in daily life outside the temple. So clearly, you cannot bring a sacrifice and then continue your wayward way of life. Obviously, bringing a sacrifice should be done with contrition and should be done in a way that promotes teshuva. That's obviously the intention. Thus, the deletion by the reformers of the passages in our daily prayer book which referred to the sacrifices was shown by Rav Hirsch to be as mistaken and presumptuous as their deletion of the references to Tzion and the restoration of Jewish nationhood in the Holy Land. Nothing, therefore, is more apt than the study of Rav Hirsch's theory of the Korbanos to enable us to say, with deep conviction and fervor, the daily supplication in our Shmona Esrei, that we want to restore the Avoda to the Beis HaMikdash. And on Yom Tov, we have an alternative version of this, which gets into more detail, where we basically say that we hope that our tefillos will be as acceptable as korbanos to Hashem, and we beseech Hashem to allow us to see the rebuilding of Tzion and to allow us to worship in the Beis HaMikdash as we are supposed to. We're now going to transition to a discussion of tefillah, what the sacrifices, korbanos, achieved by deed symbol, prayer, tefillah, achieves by word symbol. According to Rav Hirsch, the gravamen, now gravamen means the significant part, of the Jewish prayer does not lie in petitions to God, nor in swiftly passing religious emotions, but in honest self-scrutiny before God and in confrontation with the great truths and moral postulates of the Torah. The very word, hispalel, from which tefillah, the Hebrew word for prayer, is derived, originally meant to judge oneself, and we're going to get back to this point later on. Tefillah is thus an honest attempt in the presence of God to get a true picture of oneself and to compare what it is with what it ought to be, in order to purify and strengthen one's spiritual and moral powers. The English word prayer does not completely express this concept of tefillah, because the literal meaning of the word pray, to ask for something, only covers some kinds of tefillah, namely techina and bakasha. A special interest is Rav Hirsch's explanation of the benedictions, brachos, and particularly of the word baruch, as used in addressing God. In his 19 letters, he describes the bracha as the highest of all prayers because they provide us with a firm resolution actively to promote and participate in the fulfillment of the divine purpose in the life of man. Baruch atah, the standard formula of the blessings, means, therefore, I solemnly promise and pledge myself to fulfill your will and to use all the physical and spiritual powers which you have bestowed upon me in your service. Thus, the bracha is the summit of the tefillah, the inner avoda, which desires us to gather strength for the outer avoda, that is, for life. In this manner, we help to further the divine purpose on earth and become cooperators with God in creating the moral universe. So now we get a little bit more general. This leads us to the basic idea of Rav Hirsch's philosophy of Judaism, the sanctification of life. Avoda is usually translated by divine service, which refers to prayer in the house of God. Now, one of the big things of the Reform movement is that they wanted to place Judaism into shul, to make the shul the central point of life, the central point of Judaism. And this is false, because Torah permeates and rules all of life. So continuing, against this fundamental error of localizing God in the house of worship, instead of allowing him to become a central force in our life, Rav Hirsch wrote some of his most trenchant essays, in one of which he had the courage to exclaim, "If I had the power, I would provisionally close all synagogues for 100 years. Do not tremble at the thought of it, Jewish heart. What would happen? Jews and Jewesses, without synagogues, desiring to remain such, would be forced to concentrate on a Jewish life and a Jewish home. The Jewish officials connected with the synagogue would have to look to the only opportunity now open to them to teach young and old how to live a Jewish life and how to build a Jewish home. All synagogues closed by Jewish hands would constitute the strongest protest against the abandonment of the Torah in home and life." This dramatic passage throws into relief the wrong notion that synagogues in themselves are sufficient to perpetuate Judaism. To be religious in the Jewish sense of this word does not primarily mean to pray, although prayer is an essential part of all personal religion. To be religious in the Torah sense means to conceive of all human activities as falling within one scheme whose character is determined by the spiritual destiny of mankind. The farmer behind the plow, the workman on the bench, the merchant with his goods, and the scholar with his thoughts, they all have an equal opportunity of serving God as much as the priest in the temple, perhaps even more so. In the conception of the Torah, only spiritual victory, which is won in the arena of life, is worth achieving. For the highest aim of Jewish teaching is the sanctification of life in all its aspects. Commenting on the prophetic utterance, "Heichal Hashem, Heichal Hashem, Heichal Hashem Hema," which is a pasuk in Yirmiyah, which basically means that the people come and discuss the Beis HaMikdash, they say, "Heichal Hashem, Heichal Hashem," and the prophet answers them, "Heichal Hashem Hema," that you yourselves are the Beis HaMikdash, meaning in your own life you have to be a Mikdash Ma'at. Rav Hirsch says, from the point of view of the Torah, the real temple of God is not the mere building of brick and stone, but the Jew whose whole life is a continuous glorification of God. Either the Torah knows no worship at all, or its worship comprises the whole of human life. Now, to sum up everything, what then are the great principles that guided Rav Hirsch in his classification of the laws of the Torah? He himself named them as justice, love, and education. The first principle underlies, as we have seen, the chukim and mishpatim. The principle of love underlies the mitzvos, and the principle of education, in other words, the training of ourselves and others to a godly life through observance of the laws of the Torah, underlies the categories of toros, eidos, and avoda. Thus, the system of laws of the Torah, postulating as it does an imposing unity of religion, law, and life, conduces to an inner harmony of the human personality, and finally, to harmony between God, man, and the universe. Just a side point, being that sacrifices are d'oraisa, are of Torah origin, it would appear that by listening tefillah under avoda, the Rav Hirsch is of the opinion that prayer tefillah is also d'oraisa. So let us begin the letter inside. The last category, avoda, now remains for our consideration. It involves stepping away from our daily life with all its activities in order to regain those truths which we ought to have taken to heart in our lives, but which we let slip away because of the deceptions, confusion, conflicts, and temptations of living. Avodah Shebelev is what our sages call it, the realization of the divine will by our inner self, that is, self-elevation and self-purification. Tefillah, prayer, represents the endeavor to arrive at an accurate assessment of ourselves in relation to God, the world, and man. Formerly, we had also for this purpose the symbolic actions of the sacrifices, pure symbols both in what they represented and in how they were offered. The temple itself represented the abode of the Torah, which is Yisrael's focal point and the source of sanctity for its life. In it, the Aron represented the concept that the Torah is God-given, the menorah, and shulchan, the concept that the physical and mental faculties needed for implementation of the Torah are God-given too. So we stated that the Aron represented the concept that the Torah is God-given. So we know that inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim was the Ark, the Aron, and inside were the two sets of luchos, And next to the Luchos, on the outside, was the Torah, which was written by Moshe Rabbeinu. And the Shechina rests on this spot, or actually right above this spot. And this teaches us the concept that Torah is God-given. And this one location is the main focal point of the entire Mikdash. We are now going to discuss the Korbanos, and of course Rav Hirsch explains the sacrificial service through his understanding of Jewish symbolism, and we already discussed this at great length in our introduction from Diane Grunfeld. The sacrifices involve divesting ourselves of sensuality, haktaras hakavid v'hakilayos, and of selfishness, haktaras chilev, and consecrating to God our life, zirikas hadam, our sentiments, kitores, and indeed our entire personality, ola, by fulfilling the Torah. By means of these sacrificial actions, we were able to express our striving too. So first we're going to deal with the ola. Consecrate ourselves to God through fulfillment of the Torah. Next is the asham and the chatos. Regain the fortified purity of our lives by divesting ourselves of sensuality and selfishness, that is, return to the Torah. Acknowledge God as having granted us some outstanding blessing or benefit, or as being the source of a state of untroubled peace in our life, while at the same time, and now we're going to discuss Shlomim and Todah, renouncing any sensuous or selfish thought in connection with these blessings and, on the contrary, dedicating them exclusively to the service of God through fulfillment of the Torah. And at this point, we're going to get into tefillah a little bit. All of these symbolic actions were accompanied, moreover, by the spoken word. So that refers to the ma'amados, which we mentioned earlier. As for us, the Beis Hamikdash has sunk in ruins, but the spoken word remains, and indeed, in a more comprehensive form, since now it also has taken the place of the symbolic actions themselves. The purpose of words of prayer, tefillah, is lehispalel, purification, illumination, uplifting of our inner self toward recognition of the truth, not an emotional fleeting devotion, a momentary ecstasy, a flood of tears, but a cleansing of the thoughts and of the heart. So we see that Rav Hirsch does not explain tefillah as a way to get ourselves emotionally involved and attached, some kind of fleeting ecstasy which you feel at a given time. That's not the purpose of tefillah, Rav Hirsch says. And he explains again, as we mentioned earlier, the idea, the word lehispalel is a reflexive word. It means to judge oneself. And this is what you do every time that you daven, that we have tefillah. We see if we have lived up to what we should be living up to. We compare ourselves to what we should be. We are judging our position, and we strive to fix ourselves as best as we can. And we have to do this constantly, three times a day, every day. And this avodah shebelev prepares us for the rest of our day, our outward avodah. Now, this does not mean that tefillah does not bring one to an emotional connection with Hashem. That's not what it means at all. And it also does not mean that you're not asking for specific things in tefillah. You are doing that as well. However, the main point, the main thrust of tefillah is to mention to myself again and again, three times a day, every single day when I daven Shmona Esrei, these ideals that our Chachamim set up for us, and to make sure that I am matching those high ideals. Now, this understanding of tefillah might solve the following problem. People are bothered that on Erev Rosh Hashanah, we say Baruch Aleinu, and we ask for Parnassah. Well, what good is asking Parnassah in the last couple of minutes of the year? And people are bothered that on Motzei Yom Kippur, we say Selach Lanu, even though for the last several tefillos, the last 24 hours, we've been doing nothing but asking for Kapara. So how do we understand these brachos? So Rav Hirsch's understanding of tefillah, of lehispalel, kind of clarifies this issue, because the main point of Baruch Aleinu, or the main point of Selach Lanu, is not asking for forgiveness or asking for parnasa. The main point is that we are placing in our minds the fact that Hashem is the one that provides parnasa for us, and we are showing ourselves in Selach Lanu that Hashem is the one who provides kapara. As a secondary feature, we're also asking parnasa and also asking for kapara. But the primary feature is that we should live up to these standards ourselves. Continuing, life robs us of accurate discernment of God, the world, mankind and Yisrael, and our relationship to them. By transcending life, ascending toward God, we can retrieve this discernment in tefillah. Its components are, number one is tehillos, words of praise that express the perception of God as revealed in nature, in the world of man, and in Yisrael. The second is tefillos, devotional prayers that lead us, in relation to these concepts, to evaluate our own selves and our task. 3 and 4, bakashos and todos, words of supplication and thanks, acknowledgement that the entire future lies in God's hands, as did the past, and avowal of where we have failed so far in our life. 5. Tichinos, humble appeals expressing our effort to rise above our failures. And in order to attain all these, we have Kriyas HaTorah, reading of the Torah, the source of all concepts about life and of all its wisdom. The culmination of all these ideas and their goal is the brachos, blessings which accompany us through life. They are expressions of our resolve to implement God's will in the midst of everyday life. And again, in our introduction to this section that we read from Chorev, we discuss this idea of how the Torah and the mitzvos interplay completely into our everyday lives. If you reflect on the ideas which I have outlined, and look at our tefillos and our entire divine service from this vantage point, you will perhaps arrive at a more fitting judgment about them. We call our houses of worship shuls, from the German word for school. And that is what they are meant to be. Schools for adults, for those who have passed from the classroom into the mainstream of life. And this really places the idea of shul and what shul is and what it should be for us into a new light. Now, after we have seen all of the mitzvos, the following is the conclusion that we must come to. Now, my dear Benjamin, ask yourself this question. A body of teaching that calls on us to recognize God's presence in the world and in human existence, and to accept His will as our task, that lets us see Him as the Father of all human beings, and every creature and every human being as our brother, that turns our whole life into service of God by having us act justly and lovingly toward each and every being, and instructs us, moreover, to teach these basic truths of life to ourselves and to others. Can this be a doctrine that cripples the heart as well as the mind, that stifles the joys of life and turns men into brooding monks? Can it be that the study of these teachings, provided it is pursued honestly and intelligently, perverts and deadens the mind, stunts the heart? And Rav Hirsch says the following to introduce Tehillim Yud Tes, which he places at the end of this letter. Surely the words of the sweet singer of Yisrael, David HaMelech obviously, are not romantic fantasy, but the truth profoundly felt. Hashomayim misaprim kivod kel, umaseh yadav magid harakia. True, the heavens declare themselves revelation of God's glory, the thin sheet of space, that it is His handiwork. Yom liyom yabia omer, v'layla l'layla yechave doas. True, day to day proclaims that God has spoken, night after night revives the thoughts of deity. Ein omer v'ein divarim b'li nishma kolam. No speech we need, no words are spoken, the voice is heard without them. B'chol ha'aretz yatzak kavam, uvikze sevel milehem, la'shemesh som ohel bohem. Through all the earth their voice goes forth, to the end of the earthly world their words. In them He has set the tent of His Son. V'hu kichasan yotze mechupaso, yosis kigibor larutz orach. So that like a chasan, a groom, it may leave its canopy and rejoice as if it were almighty to run its course. Mikzeh ha-shamayim motza'o uskufaso alkitsosam venistar mechamoso. And yet, fixed in heaven is its issue. Its circuit reaches ever the same end, and thus it is that before the Son of God, no one is hidden. Toras Hashem timima mishivas nafesh, edus Hashem ne'emona machkimas pesi. But only the law of God is complete, giving answer to the inquiring soul. The testimony of the Lord alone is forever faithful, giving wisdom to the unlearned. Pikudei Hashem yishorim misamech elev, mitzvas Hashem bara mi'iras enoyim. The ordinances of the Lord are righteous, giving joy to the heart. The commands of the Lord are clear, giving light to the eyes. Yiras Hashem tehora omedes load, mishpitei Hashem emes tzodku yachdov. The fear of the Lord is pure, and therefore endures forever. The judgments of the Lord are true, they are justice altogether. Hanechemodim mizahav umipazrav, umsukim midivash vinofes tzufim. Desirable more than gold and much ornament, sweeter than honey and dripping comb. Gam abdicha nizar bahem, oh that your servant too might be illuminated by them. Vishamram ekev rav, if he keeps them, how great the path of life. And the translation that we use here is the translation in the 19 letters, and very often, Rav Hirsch's translation might be slightly different from a standard translation that one might be used to, and this has to do with his system of understanding words, as we've explained in the past. So for a more complete understanding of how Rav Hirsch understands this part of Tehillim, see his Pirush inside. And this concludes letter number 14 on Avoda, and completely concludes our discussion of the various categories of the mitzvos.